Threat and from the Apology, Part 2, Seek Truth Rather Than Escape Death by Plato. About the author. There is little doubt that Plato conversed with Socrates during Socrates' last years. Plato was probably in his early 30s when Socrates was charged, and it is quite possible he was forced to leave Athens after Socrates was executed. Perhaps, either as a result of Socrates' trial or of the fact that Plato came from an aristocratic family, Plato distrusted democracy as an effective form of government. With respect to the psyche, Plato struggled with the problem of the soul having parts, or being divisible, yet being eternal. He argues in Phaedo that life is the preparation for death. At death, the soul separates from the body, and is released from the body's restrictions. About the work. Plato continues his account of the trial of Socrates. In this, the final part of the Apology Socrates is found guilty of the charges, by a vote of 281 to 220, undoubtedly the ethical seriousness with which Socrates spent his final days profoundly affected Plato as a young student. Socrates now explains why he has nothing to fear from death. Socrates argues that even if the soul were not immortal, death would be a good. Nevertheless, Socrates did not doubt the immortality of the soul. The reading from the Apology, Part 2 begins now. Socrates is found guilty, responds to the verdict. There are many reasons why I am not grieved, O men of Athens, at the vote of condemnation. I expected it, and am only surprised that the votes are so nearly equal, for I had thought that the majority against me would have been far larger, but now had 30 votes gone over to the other side, I should have been acquitted. And I may say, I think, that I have escaped Miletus. I may say more, for without the assistance of any and Lycan, anyone may see that he would not have had a fifth part of the votes, as the law requires, in which case he would have incurred a fine of 1,000 drachma. And so he proposes death as the penalty. And what shall I propose on my part, O men of Athens? Clearly that which is my due. And what is my due? What return shall be made to the man who has never had the wit to be idle during his whole life, but has been careless of what the many care for wealth, and family interests, and military offices, and speaking in the assembly, and magistracies, and plots, and parties? Reflecting that I was really too honest a man to be a politician and live, I did not go where I could do no good to you or to myself, but where I could do the greatest good privately to every one of you, thither I went, and sought to persuade every man among you that he must look to himself and seek virtue and wisdom before he looks to his private interests, and look to the state before he looks to the interests of the state, and that this should be the order which he observes in all his actions. What shall be done to such an one? Doubtless some good thing, O men of Athens, if he has his reward, and the good should be of a kind suitable to him. What would be a reward suitable to a poor man, who is your benefactor, and who desires leisure, that he may instruct you? There can be no reward so fitting as maintenance in the Prytaneum, O men of Athens, a reward which he deserves far more than the citizen who has won the prize at Olympia in the horse or chariot race, whether the chariots were drawn by two horses or by many. For I am in want, and he has enough, and he only gives you the appearance of happiness, and I give you the reality. And if I am to estimate the penalty fairly, I should say that maintenance in the Prytaneum is the just return. Why exile is not acceptable? Perhaps you think that I am braving you in what I am saying now, as in what I said before about the tears and prayers. But this is not so. I speak rather because I am convinced that I never intentionally wronged anyone, although I cannot convince you. The time has been too short. If there were law at Athens, as there is in other cities, that a capital cause should not be decided in one day, then I believe that I should have convinced you. But I cannot, in a moment, refute great slanders, and as I am convinced that I never wronged another, I will assuredly not wrong myself. I will not say of myself that I deserve any evil, or propose any penalty. Why should I? Because I am afraid of the penalty of death, which Miletus proposes. When I do not know whether death is a good or an evil, why should I propose a penalty, which would certainly be an evil? Shall I say imprisonment? And why should I live in prison, and be the slave of the magistrates of the year of 11? Or shall the penalty be a fine, and imprisonment until the fine is paid? There is the same objection. I should have to lie in prison, for money I have none, and cannot pay. And if I say exile and this may possibly be the penalty, which you will affix, I must indeed be blinded, by the love of life, if I am so rational as to expect that, when you, who are my own citizens, cannot endure my discourses, and words, and have found them so grievous, and odious that you will have no more of them, others are likely to endure me. No indeed, men of Athens, it is not very likely. And what life should I lead, at my age, wandering from city to city, ever changing my place of exile, and always being driven out? For I am quite sure, that wherever I go, there as here, the young men will flock to me, and if I drive them away, their elders will drive me out at their request, and if I let them come, their fathers and friends will drive me out for their sakes. Someone will say, yes, Socrates, but cannot you hold your tongue, and then you may go into a foreign city, and no one will interfere with you? Now I have great difficulty in making you understand my answer to this. For if I tell you that to do as you say would be a disobedience to the god, and therefore that I cannot hold my tongue, you will not believe that I am serious. And if I say again that daily, to discourse about virtue, and of those other things, about which you hear me examining myself, and others, is the greatest good of man, and that the unexamined life is not worth living, you are still less likely to believe me. Yet I say, what is true, although a thing of which it is hard for me to persuade you. Also I have never been accustomed to think that I deserve to suffer any harm. Had I money I might have estimated the offense it would, I was able to pay, and not have been much the worse. But I have none, and therefore I must ask you to proportion the fine to my means. Well, perhaps I could afford a mina, and therefore I propose that penalty. Plato, Crito, Critobulus, and Apollodorus, my friends here, bid me say 30 min, and they will be the certes. Let 30 min be the penalty, for which sum they will be ample security to you. Truth, more important than life. Not much time will be gained, O Athenians, in return for the evil name, which you will get from the detractors of the city, who will say that you killed Socrates, the wise man, for they will call me wise, even although I am not wise, when they want to reproach you. If you had waited a little while, your desire would have been fulfilled, in the course of nature. For I am far advanced in years, as you may perceive, and not far from death. I am speaking now not to all of you, but only to those who have condemned me to death. And I have another thing to say to them. You think that I was convicted because I had no words of the sort, which would have procured my acquittal, I mean, if I had thought fit to leave nothing undone or unsaid. Not so, the deficiency which led to my conviction was not of words, certainly not. But I had not the boldness, or impudence or inclination to address you, as you would have liked me to do, weeping and wailing, and lamenting, and saying, and doing many things, which you have been accustomed to hear from others, and which, as I maintain, are unworthy of me. I thought at the time that I ought not to do anything common, or mean when in danger. Nor do I now repent of the style of my defense. I would rather die having spoken after my manner, than speak in your manner, and live. For neither in war nor yet at law, ought I or any man to use a very way of escape and death. Often in battle there can be no doubt, that if a man will throw away his arms, and fall on his knees, before his pursuers, he may escape death, and in other dangers there are other ways of escape and death, if a man is willing to say and do anything. The difficulty, my friends, is not to avoid death, but to avoid unrighteousness, for that runs faster than death. I am old, and move slowly, and the slower runner has overtaken me, and my accusers are keen and quick, and the faster runner, who is in righteousness, has overtaken them. And now I depart hence condemned by you to suffer the penalty of death. They too go their ways condemned by the truth, to suffer the penalty of villainy and wrong, and I must abide by my word, let them abide by theirs. I suppose that these things may be regarded as fated, and I think that they are well. Socrates' advice. And now, O men, who have condemned me, I would fain prophesy to you, for I am about to die, and in the hour of death men are gifted with prophetic power. And I prophesy to you, who are my murderers, that immediately after my departure punishment, far heavier than you have inflicted, on me will surely await you. Me you have killed, because you wanted to escape the accuser, and not to give an account of your lives. But that will not be, as you suppose, far otherwise. For I say that there will be more accusers of you than there are now accusers, whom hitherto I have restrained. And as they are younger, they will be more inconsiderate with you, and you will be more offended at them. If you think that by killing men you can prevent someone from censuring your evil lives, you are mistaken. That is not a way of escape, which is either possible or honorable. The easiest and the noblest way is not to be disabling others, but to be improving yourselves. This is the prophecy which I utter before my departure to the judges who have condemned me. Friends, who would have acquitted me, I would like also to talk with you about the thing which has come to pass while the magistrates are busy, and before I go to the place at which I must die. Stay then a little, for we may as well talk with one another while there is time. You are my friends, and I should like to show you the meaning of this event which has happened to me. O my judges, for you I may truly call judges, I should like to tell you of the wonderful circumstance. Hitherto the divine faculty of which the internal oracle is the source has constantly been in the habit of opposing me even about trifles, if I was going to make a slip or error in any matter, and now as you see there has come upon me that which may be thought, and is generally believed to be, the last and worst evil. But the oracle made no sign of opposition, either when I was leaving my house in the morning, or when I was on my way to the court, or while I was speaking at anything which I was going to say, and yet I have often been stopped in the middle of a speech, but now in nothing I either said or did touching the matter in hand has the oracle opposed me. What do I take to be the explanation of this silence? I will tell you. It is an intimation that what has happened to me is a good, and that those of us who think that death is an evil are in error. For the customary sign would surely have opposed me had I been going to evil and not to good. Argument that death is a good. Let us reflect in another way, and we shall see that there is great reason to hope that death is a good, for one of two things: either death is a state of nothingness and utter unconsciousness, or as men say, there is a change and migration of the soul from this world to another. Now if you suppose that there is no consciousness, but a sleep like the sleep of him who is undisturbed even by dreams, death will be an unspeakable gain. For if a person were to select the night in which his sleep was undisturbed even by dreams, and were to compare with this the other days and nights of his life, and then were to tell us how many days and nights he had passed in the course of his life better and more pleasantly than this one, I think that any man, I will not say a private man, but even the great king, will not find many such days or nights when compared with others. Now if death be of such a nature, I say that to die is gain, for eternity is then only a single night. But if death is the journey to another place, and there, as men say, all the dead abide, what good, O my friends and judges, can be greater than this? If indeed when the pilgrim arrives in the world below, he is delivered from the professors of justice in this world, and finds the true judges, who are said to give judgment there, Minos and Rhadamanthus and Decus and Triptolemus, and other sons of God, who were righteous in their own life, that pilgrimage will be worth making. What would not a man give if he might converse with Orpheus, and Musus and Hesiod and Homer? Nay, if this be true, let me die again and again. I myself, too, shall have a wonderful interest in their meeting and conversing with Palamedes, and Ajax the son of Telamon, and any other ancient hero who has suffered death through an unjust judgment, and there will be no small pleasure, as I think, in comparing my own sufferings with theirs. Above all, I shall then be able to continue my search into true and false knowledge, as in this world, so also in the next, And I shall find out who is wise, and who pretends to be wise, and is not. What would not a man give, O judges, to be able to examine the leader of the great Trojan expedition, or Odysseus or Sisyphus, or numberless others, men and women too? What infinite delight would there be in conversing with them, and asking them questions? In another world they do not put a man to death for asking questions. Assuredly not. For besides being happier than we are, they will be immortal, if what is said is true. Wherefore, O judges, be of good cheer about death, and know of a certainty that no evil can happen to a good man, either in life or after death. He and his are not neglected by the gods, nor has my own approaching and happened by mere chance. But I see clearly that the time had arrived when it was better for me to die and be released from trouble, wherefore the oracle gave no sign. For which reason, also, I am not angry with my condemners or with my accusers. They have done me no harm, although they did not mean to do me any good, and for this I may gently blame them. Still I have a favor to ask of them. When my sons are grown up, I would ask you, O my friends, to punish them, and I would have you trouble them, as I have troubled you, if they seem to care about riches, or anything, more than about virtue, or if they pretend to be something, when they are really nothing, then reprove them, as I have reproved you, for not caring about that for which they ought to care, and thinking that they are something, when they are really nothing. And if you do this, both I and my sons will have received justice at your hands. The hour of departure has arrived, and we go our ways, I to die, and you to live. Which is better, God only knows. This completes the reading of Apology, Part 2 by Plato, under the new free documentation license. This file in this and other formats is available on the internet at philosophy.lander.edu.